Hey, once again, you're back. It's the On Fire Show. We're back today. It is Tuesday the 13th at HamiltonRadio.net, where it's another Super Tuesday, and it's pretty good today. Today is a cold day, and it's pretty good because we got a lot of great things happening, a lot of great things to talk about. Also, you're here with myself, Daryl Mikel Brooks.
Joe Siana.
Neil Schloss.
Neil Schloss and Joe Siana. It's a great Tuesday, but I just want to say something.
It's too cold for slush. It's all ice.
It's slush out there. It's not slush, but it's slush.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I got some bad news to, you know, tell the audience, if you don't know by now, that Clifford Adams, his wife, was on a show a couple of weeks ago. He died of liver cancer. He died night before last, in the middle of the night. He was a master musician. Kool & the Gang. He joined Kool & the Gang in 1977. But before that, he played with Patti LaBelle, a lot of great R&B artists, classical. Matter of fact, he taught at different colleges. I think he taught at Yale. He was a master musician. And, you know, I met him a few times, and we talked a lot. A very nice guy, cool guy. And matter of fact, his interview with Anwar of Anwar Reflections will be on Fire News Network tomorrow. I did a video interview back in 2011, and, you know, our condolences to his family, and I think hopefully that we'll have his, maybe try to get his wife on, or someone close to his family, on a show next Tuesday to, you know, talk a few minutes about the history of Clifford Adams. Yeah, Kool & the Gang. Yeah, he was a great master musician. And you know, it's terrible when you lose a life and someone is great like that, and way before his time. And you know, I just feel bad in the music industry. They talked about him, he was on Billboard magazine, and he's been in a few other magazines online talking about his life and his past and great things that he did.
Well, I think we need to celebrate his life, right?
Oh yeah, definitely celebrate his life. There's a few fundraisers happening. I think it's coming up this week in Willingboro, and hopefully I'll get the information with that before the end of the show. People can check out or send money to help his family out and help pay some of his bills that he had during his hospital stay. But once again, it's Super Tuesday, and it's an exciting day. We got an exciting show. And, you know, Neil has one of the exciting guests that's going to definitely talk about some interesting things. What's his name, Neil?
Frank Mara.
Frank Mara.
He's a Millstone resident, first-time author. Actually was a lieutenant in the New York Police Department. He was assigned to the landfill after 9/11, mm-hmm. which became the largest crime scene in America. And he wrote a book. The book I read, it's coming out soon. He sent us a pre-release, just so since we're going to have him on the show. And it's moving. I mean, it brings you back to that day. But at the same time, it's about looking forward, and at the same time, the family members that have lost lives and what they so I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say about it and his experience.
All right.
He'll be here around 9 o'clock.
He'll be here at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, 9 o'clock.
So. You know, a lot of things are happening around the world. As you know, they had the they caught the terrorists that killed those people
Charlie Hebdo.
They definitely caught him. It was in Paris, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, at the news that killed all those people. The news, I think 12 people were murdered in Paris, and they killed three and one. I think she's a female. She is. They're trying to track her now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sad when you see these terrorists, and I think that ISIS just had a claim that, you know, everyone go after Americans and people in England and in Paris, kill the cops.
But again, we go back to blowback. Like, what is it? Something that we did that is causing this? I don't know that answer, but.
I think,
I mean,
you know,
Ron
I
Paul
think,
talked about that all the time.
Yeah.
The concept of blowback.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this too. And, you know, a lot of this goes back to, you know, World War One. The Ottoman Empire. The fact that the West divided the Middle East up to its own, you know, own purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It put its own guys in charge of the countries that they could work with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, and there's been hell to pay for it ever since. And we have continued to meddle in it to, you know, for oil interests and everything else.
Yeah, if you, I remember Glenn Beck did a show a few months ago about the Ottoman Empire, and talked about what happened and how the European countries basically split up the Ottoman Empire and changed the names and different names of the countries.
That didn't exist.
Countries, you know, just Iraq didn't exist.
No.
And so it's like one of those things. I mean, when you go also, you look what happened in Europe, and you look what happened in 1884, 1885, the Berlin Conference. And if you know anything about that, that's when the European countries went to Africa and split up and took all the, you know, treasures and things from Africa. And what happened was that I think that was one of the reasons why World War One happened, because Germany decided that they didn't get enough of Africa.
Well, Germany was late to the game because Germany, there was no Germany. There was always, there were a number of divided principalities. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was 15 or 20, but there was no United Nation State. Therefore, those that were, Spain, France, England, et cetera, they were out in front, and Germany had... did not get in on that. Then World War II, there was the two things that were there. One is after it was punitive measures put against Germany, the reparations, mm-hmm. which drove them, you know, which crippled the country economically.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, if we can't expand, you know, across seas, we'll need living space here. They called it Liebeschon. And then they started moving into Slovakia and the conquest started there in order to expansion. But, you know, history is cumulative, and it repeats itself. And, you know, in the Middle East, it doesn't excuse the terrorism. It doesn't certainly help the people who are killed. But, you know, we took a democratically elected government in Iran, displaced that with the Shah. And
put the Shah in. And then they had they kidnapped the Muslim people in Iran, the young people, the college students.
Right.
Iran hostage.
And then some like 14 years ago, we had mission accomplished in Iraq, and that was going to be the model of the modern democracy in the Middle East. And it's become a vortex that we're sinking into.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at history, you look at what Woodrow Wilson did and the whole, how Woodrow Wilson was thinking and how he basically got us into World War One and Two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there were...
Dan Woodrow Wilson.
Well, it was a progressive vision of the world that through warfare and through force, we were going to remake the world in our image.
Yeah, moral view.
Yeah, our moral
view of the world. Well, you know, even, I mean, if you look what Woodrow Wilson did and look at some of the stuff he did, you know, prohibition. I mean, wow. You know,
but here's the other, you know, with the...
am I right?
Yeah.
Prohibition, what, Federal Reserve?
Mm-hmm. It's government control.
Yeah.
I mean, that's me. I see it as government control.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Ayn Rand, I was watching the movie Ayn Rand.
You did?
Yeah, I was watching, well, the documentary about her life.
Right.
And it talked about the progressivism and how basically progressivism basically wanted to change the world. I have the moral authority. I am the leader. I know what's right.
It's it's a secular religion, essentially, is what it is.
Yeah.
And which is why there's political correctness, which is the modern equivalent of blasphemy and heresy.
And bringing up Ayn Rand, if you're listening in, we did a show last week. If you missed it, you can catch it on the On Demand channel on HamiltonRadio.net. If you click on the On Fire show, you'll see the On Demand option. Also, Joe can tell you other places that you can see that. I think it's on YouTube now, or it's going to be uploaded onto YouTube.
We're up on YouTube.
Oh,
how many shows we got?
I think we got 12 or 15 shows up on YouTube. We've got we're up on Blogspot with the shows. And Neil, we need a picture of Uncle Jeff, I need a picture of Uncle Jeff.
Uncle Jeff.
But Daryl, you know the one thing. One of the ironies of this, you know, the past weekend there was the free speech march, you know, in Paris, which one of the ironies is that
Obama wasn't there.
Well, not that he wasn't there. That's not an irony. That's just like, well, the NFL the playoffs were wrong. Come on, the playoffs.
But what do you think about that? I mean, that's been in the news, right? That he wasn't there. It's going around.
Yeah, well, I'll move on to that one. But the whole idea of having a free speech march in Paris is Charlie Hebdo was continually being prosecuted under the speech laws. They have all these politically correct speech laws now where you can't make fun of the gays, you can't make fun of different religions, you can't make fun of this, you can't make fun of that. So it's a nation where speech has been under attack. Now, that somebody went over the line and attacked it in this way, but the whole progressive left is very against free speech.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
Let's be real about that.
Oh, yeah. And you know, one of the things that they were talking about at the free speech march that I seen on television, it was on CNN, they talked about Obama wasn't there. Well, you know, one of the things is that, you know, come on now. You know, you're in a country and then the Secret Service, how the Secret Service is right about now. You know, Obama wouldn't want to go anywhere with the Secret Service protecting them. But it causes problems.
He might have had Mossad protecting them.
Yeah,
they're a lot better.
Yeah. but you know, it's one of those things, like you see all these marches, all these countries coming together and these leaders coming together, and it's pretty interesting. And you know, they talk of Will Paris on the news site On Fire News Network. One of the writers talk about Will Paris be like America, and that Will Paris have their own Patriot Act, and you know, and what would the people from Paris think about that when they see all the terrorists coming to that country? What exactly could happen? You know, and will they be tapping phones in Paris? Will they be, you know, listening to the phones and listening, you know, in different
government
devices?
Government always looks for the excuse to do these things.
Well, the chat room is starting to fill up. You're interested in the chat room, because we got a question here from the chat room.
Well, we want to at least talk about our weekend, because you had a great weekend.
Yeah,
yes,
that's true.
We're going to talk about our weekend.
We'll come back to that question.
We've got to have a great weekend. It's 8:40. We had Dr. Bernard Lafayette. He was Martin Luther King's aide in the 60s. And he came to the city of Trenton. He spoke at the ANC Theater. We had about 230 people after watching the movie Selma. He spoke before that, but he came to Trenton, and he talked about at the Second Presbyterian Church of Trenton. He talked about nonviolence education. Neil had a great discussion. You talked for a good half hour, Neil?
Probably about 45 minutes.
45 minutes, and, you know, I was with him all day for 2 days. You know, we stopped that he came in that Friday. He was at we went to Edith Savage Jennings' house. Now, Edith Savage Jennings, she was Coretta Scott's best friend.
Well, she was.
Coretta Scott King's best friend.
Did they know each other?
They knew each other. Yeah, they knew each other. Yeah.
And I mean, he was such a nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful guy.
He was, of course, I think the people that came were, I wouldn't say intimidated, but just honored to be there, that they weren't sure if they should go up and shake his hand, give him a hug. He was great. I mean, I really was glad to get out there to meet him.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate that I couldn't stay long. Mm-hmm. But just sitting there having that conversation with him about his experiences, it was like one story after another.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Harvard graduate, went to law school.
I mean, the guy is a genius.
And,
he's 74 years
old. Well-spoken. And I tried to find out, one, what made him get into the movement, and just, of course, it's about nonviolence, about passive civil disobedience.
Nonviolent civil disobedience.
Showing the government that they don't have rights over you by their actions. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there were lawsuits that were filed that he went to the Supreme Court. He was rattling off some of those court cases, which, again, there's so many court cases to study. But he knew the things relating to voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
He was very big into getting the voting rights to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was a pleasure and an honor.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that, Daryl, you were able to get him there.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful. You know, I brought four Martin Luther King aides to the city of Trenton, Dr. Bernard Lafayette, Reverend James Bevel, Reverend Al Sampson came twice, and Reverend James Love. But one of the things that we talked about, I was with him all day. We talked, we ate dinner, we sat down, we went to the mall together after we left. I mean, we talked about, and at the forum, you know, there were so many, we had a few people, and that was one of the shameful things that, you know, a lot of people didn't show up. But there were individuals who were there, asked so many great questions. I mean, and then there was this one guy, I don't know if you've probably seen him. He was a teacher from
Trenton.
No, Alex Bethea was there, but it was another teacher that came in. He was a teacher.
A history teacher.
A history teacher.
Yes.
And he asked, he was like, you know, he asked Dr. Bernard Lafayette, well, what do you think about the assassination? Who you think killed who killed Martin Luther King?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he asked that question, and he said it was the superpowers. I mean, the kind of like the – he didn't want to say exactly who he said, but he said there were a super government, you know, of people.
Right.
You know,
powerful people knew that with his movement, change was going to occur, and they would lose that power, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he said that, I mean, that's one of the most, you know, Selma was great with Martin Luther King, but the most the part that I love about Dr. King and that whole movement is after the Vietnam War and the Poor People's Campaign. And Dr. Lafayette, he was the coordinator for the whole Poor People's Campaign. He coordinated people from all around the country. I mean, this is how bright this guy was.
Right, right.
You know, for King, and he was not a part of the Martin Luther King movement in the beginning. He wasn't.
No,
he was part of Selma and CORE.
Right.
And the, you know, and SNCC and the Freedom Riders. But after King decided this guy is so bright.
Now, what are Freedom Riders? Because I kind of saw that as I looked
them
up.
Well, the Freedom, the bus drivers, you know, they were not bus drivers. They would get on the bus and drive through Alabama, Mississippi, the Greyhound buses. And in a documentary that about the Freedom Riders, that they were on the bus. And what happened was they got off the bus, I think it was in Alabama, Mississippi, and they burnt the bus down. And they got off the bus, and the mob just started beating them with sticks.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was terrible. Bats and I mean, these are the things that people had to go through in the late 50s. And I mean, the Freedom Riders.
And that takes courage also.
Oh yeah, take courage.
I mean, way more courage than I can even muster. Like,
yeah.
I mean, knowing that you're going into essentially a violent situation. I mean, to me, that was, like I say, very, very. I wish I had more time to spend with him.
Oh, you know, we definitely have to do something, a bigger event, something to invite him back. But, you know, one of the things he talked about is about government. And he said, you know, this government was a corrupt government, and this government had to do something to Martin Luther King to stop him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, you know, they liked him when he was all right with, you know, fighting against, you know, nonviolence and black issues, white issues, racism. But when he turned about the powers to be to challenge the money system of this government and try to say, listen, you know, what are you doing? You know, he brought poor people to Washington.
Right.
That was it. They had to get rid of them.
And well, what else did you do this weekend besides hang out with
Dr. Bernard Lafayette? No, I just hung out with him.
The whole time. Awesome.
That's all, hang out with him.
Well, Joe, what'd you do?
What'd you do this weekend, Joe?
Well, no, you were with me on Sunday, first of all.
I was?
You're going to try to hide that, but it's true, Darryl.
What was I with you on Sunday?
You and I, okay.
Libertarian party, man.
Oh, damn it. That's
Libertarian
right.
Party.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Libertarian party.
Well, what I did on Saturday, I remember about 5 weeks ago, I was in here, and they asked them what you're doing the weekend. I was pissing and moaning about trying to get the our podcasts up and working and all that. And I was spending Saturday on that. We've got we're on YouTube now, so go to YouTube, look for On Fire Radio Show. You'll see our shows. Go to Blogspot. And put in On Fire Radio Show podcast, you'll find them. Plus, you can find them at Hamilton Radio. So we're starting to be available everywhere. So I worked on that all day Saturday. And on Sunday, Darryl and I went up and visited our friends at the New Jersey Libertarian Party. And they are our newest sponsor. So
yes,
they'll be coming
our sponsors.
Probably next week with commercials.
Yay. Liberty. Freedom and liberty.
Right.
Freedom and liberty.
So if you love this show and you love liberty, join the New Jersey Libertarian Party, and if you're not from New Jersey, you can join anyway. They'll take your $15. We have out-of-state members, and we're fighting for liberty all over, you know, we're putting national issues as well as local issues. So.
And I got to say, if you're a Republican or a Democrat listening, you should come out and meet the guys who are in charge of the Libertarian Party. Down to earth, willing to have a conversation, understands the role of government. I mean, they've become close friends of mine.
Right. And also, just remember, by enrolling in this party as a member, it actually does not determine your political affiliation. You can still be a registered Republican, some of us, or Democrat or independent, if that's what you see. We have a lot of Ron Paul Republicans still in the party who maintain that membership so that they can vote in the primaries, but keep their foot in the camp of liberty for the cause of the ability to get behind that. So, but they're our new sponsors, so welcome, New Jersey Libertarian Party.
Welcome.
We're going to have to go to a station break, but if you'd like to give us a call in the next break, 609-800-1003, and check out our chat room. We're on chat right now. You can chat with us.
HamiltonRadio.net. Click on the HR chat room. Of course, we'd love you to register, so you show your name if you want. If you don't, you'll just come in at the guest. Friday, and of course, soccer. So it was a four-sport weekend. Ooh. I feel like being a father of two kids that are 10 and 8, mm-hmm. I mean, you feel like you're just running around doing sports upon sports. And, mm-hmm. of course, the guest coming on, his son, amazing baseball player, Little Mara. We look forward to – hopefully he's listening in so that he can hear his dad talk about the book that's coming up. When's it coming out? February?
Yeah, we just was talking March 10th.
March 10th is the date of the book release. But I have the ability to read that leading up to this show, and I'm looking forward to having both Frank and Marie on, who are Millstone residents. Very excited to have fellow Millstone residents in the house for tonight. So, but like I said, sports weekend. And I don't think sports will end until they're, what, 21?
Or they're 21.
They're in college.
And then they're in college, and you never know where they go after that.
They get the big money in the pros.
You get 40. To sit back and relax.
That's take care of daddy.
Take care of daddy.
Let's hope so.
You know, I just want to say one of the things this weekend that with me and Dr. Lafayette talked about, and as we were leaving the Quakerbridge Mall, and I asked him, is there any time when you and Martin Luther King discussed about when is the right time for violence? Not when it, meaning, you know, he's always nonviolent.
Sure.
And he told me that Martin Luther King said the only time when violence should be used is a military is when you have a government or a military, a government that is will not stop, will keep killing and killing. And then he said that's the time when a government would just say,
overthrow the back of government, and take your government back.
And that's what he said. That Martin Luther King and him and they talked about that. If a government just won't stop being violent, won't stop killing, then there's a time when you have to do what you have to do. Then
I don't know if you asked him, but did Martin Luther King ever get into a fight ever?
I don't know. Maybe he was in high school or elementary school. I don't know. But there were some times when he said Martin would get angry. And to the point, but he said that there was a point where Martin Luther King, in his late 60s, during the Vietnam, when things start getting heated up and, you know, there was threats on his life, I mean, every day, he would get 11 phone calls to his house, you know, 11 or 12 phone calls threatening his life, bombing threats, you know, it was terrible. FBI taping his, sending wire, tapping his phones, tapping his hotel room, sending stuff to his wife, telling him you better die. You know, kill yourself. I mean, come on. You know, sending tapes with him and his...
I mean, I wonder what Coretta was saying to him.
You know, she was probably upset when she heard the phone call, some messages about, you know, women, him and some women. They taped him and... I guess, actually they had tapes of him and his and some other women. And they sent the tapes to Coretta's house. And Coretta went to I say, Martin, you know, what's going on? Martin said, well,
right.
I don't know. You know.
Right.
It wasn't me. No. Well, you know, that's all. It wasn't me.
I mean, like I said, it was, I could keep saying it over and over. Meeting a friend of Martin Luther King his birthday is coming up in 2 days. Like I said, my birthday is tomorrow, so I always felt I was one day ahead of Dr. King.
Yeah.
But, like I said, it's an honor to meet Dr. Bernard Lafayette. And I actually asked him to be on the radio show. He's been on.
Yeah,
I don't know if I was on that show.
Dr. Lafayette was on the show.
He did call him. But, you know, it's interesting what you said about the recourse to violence, because it actually goes back to the Declaration of Independence. And it says here, it says, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object convinces a design to reduce them to absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such a government and provide new guards. So basically it says, when you see the same people doing the same thing to you over and over again, no matter what you say, no matter what you do, it ain't going to change. You know what you're getting. You might have to get angry.
Yeah.
Well, guest 14058 in the chat room, and if you want to join the conversation, go to hamiltonradio.net, click on the chat room. He said, of course, we need another leader like Martin Luther King.
You got Al Sharpton. He's an FBI informant.
No, he's but like no, him in many ways.
Yeah, no, he's like not. No, please, no. It was a joke.
Oh,
yeah.
It was a joke. But
our guests are in the house.
Our guests are in the house. We'll talk about that after the guests leave.
Sure, we'll come back to
that. Yeah, we'll come back to that. We have our guests in the house.
Frank. Hello. We got Frank Mara and Maria Abate from Millstone. Welcome, guys.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so both of them, of course, Frank's probably was never an author and probably never thought about writing a book, but he had an experience that he felt like passing on to other people, an experience that everyone will remember, who, of course, was born before 9/11/2001. I lived up in Hoboken, so I was pretty close to New York City the day it happened. So I met Frank through living in town, and he told me he's coming out with a book, From Landfill to Hallowed Ground, The Largest Crime Scene in America. And I said, why don't you come on before the actual book is out so that people can get to know who Frank is, and, of course, Maria. Maria was the writer and editor and...
Oh, wow.
Both of them will explain how they got to this point and are joining our show and becoming part of the On Fire show family.
Yes.
So,
thank you all
guys.
For coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. You know, when we first started, the idea was to do something close to more of a documentary reality show on the first responders because we thought they were being forgotten and mm-hmm. a lot of people were getting sick. And just quickly, I had read on Facebook recently another police captain, 45 years old, just died.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was a first responder too, and they're saying it's his sickness was relevant to the air, the pollutants that were in the air. So as we started to put the idea of a documentary together, and jump in whenever you're ready, there were so many stories that we thought a book would be more viable. We thought a book would be better.
Sure.
So when we started to put the stories together. We started to sit and write, and
Frank came up with obviously his experiences at the landfill, which obviously I wasn't there. I teach; I'm a teacher in New York City.
What subject?
I teach Italian.
Oh, nice! So you have to teach some of the words, like ciao bella. Is that
that's the easy stuff?
Yeah.
That'll get you a good look, you know, a nice wink.
Yeah.
Okay.
So were you a writer before?
No, I dabbled. I wrote children's stories, had poetry published, nothing substantial, just hobby, I guess, you know, something outside of being a mother of three kids, teaching full time, you know. And then Frank came along with this idea, and we started putting ideas together. His experiences became really, really entertaining on so many different levels.
So now were you just hearing him tell you stories and finally said, this could be a book?
Yes.
Like, so, and is that how it's sparked?
It did, because he would write down ideas and a lot of his experiences. I would read through them, and then we would sit and talk about them, and then I would start typing. The book took, how many different turns before it got to the point that it is now?
I think to now we've probably rewrote it 3 times, and it's changed titles at least once.
Yeah.
Well, I could say... from reading it, it can bring you to tears at the beginning because, of course, it's bringing back that moment of 9/11 with the pressure of people scattering everywhere, the Staten Island Ferry running back and forth, and the moment where it didn't matter who you were, what color you are, where you're from, you were there to just help another human, period. I mean, I was in Hoboken, so Hoboken was pretty much a drop-off for a lot of the people coming out of New York City. They would jump on the path, and the path would empty out right by my office. So I saw people come out of the path covered in dust. Of course, the cell phone towers were down, so limited access to call family just to tell them that you're alive. My girlfriend at that time, who became my wife, was in the city but uptown, so I knew she was safe. She was helping at the blood bank because a friend of ours worked for the New York Blood Bank. And, of course, at that moment it was like, we need to collect enough blood to take care of the people that are going to survive but are wounded and need blood. So that was – she was there pretty much till midnight, I guess, and then had to take the ferry across because I think that was the only means of transportation at that time. But, like I said, the book, the tears are there when you read it. And then it goes on to – Frank's going to tell more about the parts of the stories and also relive it. I mean, I think we are going to try to relive the tragedy as well as the uplifting of the hearts of people getting involved.
Yes. I mean, not a lot of people know, and it's probably this is the first time it's being said publicly. The name of the book was supposed to be The City Within the Borough, because if you worked up on a landfill – it started to build like a city. I mean, it had everything. It had a cafeteria. It had a medical tent. It had the crime scene tent. It had numerous amounts of sifters. Again, cafeteria. It had a mustering area where all the civil service personnel would meet and get their instructions for the day. It had the auto pound where I worked, which was a half a mile away from where it sifted. So that was supposed to be the original name, but as the book got closer to being done, and in back and forth with the publisher, who, by the way, Brown's Books Publishing,
okay,
was giving us our first opportunity, and the story behind that is as we sent the manuscripts out, the managing editor, Dr. Janet Harris, she was supposed to be on one of the flights that day, and she gave up her ticket. She couldn't go. Mm-hmm. So when she grabbed the manuscript, it really, you know, it meant something to her.
Touches the heart.
It touches the heart. So right. As the book became closer to being finished, with her input as well as Maria's, we went from landfill to hallowed ground. Why? Well, when you look at the scenario, everybody knows what happened that day, but not a lot of people really know what happened the days, months that followed. And there are over 1,000 families who've never recovered as much, as terrible as to say, as a fingernail, anything, a hair sample. So you took roughly 1.6 million tons of debris, and you trucked and you barged it over to the Staten Island landfill. Now, a lot of these families still believe their loved ones are in those ashes in our DNA, because what a lot of people don't know is by the time the sifting was done, it started in September of 01, it concluded sometime, let's say, May of 02. The ground there rose almost over 24 inches in that area.
Wow.
So a lot of people felt as though that their loved ones were still up there. And as we started to piece it together and we started to put the book together, we felt it was hallowed ground. And the managing editor at Brown's Books, she was on board with that. She actually, you know, originated the idea, asked us to think about it. And as we looked at the stories, you know, that's what we concluded also.
Right.
That, you know, at one point it was a landfill. It was a the centralized location for Staten Island to bring your household waste. But here it is. It's like almost a cemetery without tombstones.
Right. Just to give listeners some background on Staten Island, because there are listeners from all over the country, all over the world. Staten Island is one of the boroughs that when I grew up, when you drove through Staten Island, there was these big mounds, which you thought were mounds of dirt as a kid, because it was just, and you thought those were like where you go skiing, because it's the only place, but that turned out to be pretty much the garbage dump that a lot of the boroughs brought. Is that correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
One and, of the largest.
Yeah, one
landfills.
Of yeah. So, I mean, for us living in this northeast region of America, that is known as just the if it was you caught it on a bad day and the wind was blowing towards the road. It was vicious. It was a vicious ride through.
Yeah.
But again, switching mm-hmm. over to 9/11, I mean, it changed Frank's life. I mean, but Frank, can you just give us some background on how you ended up at the landfill, what you did prior, or you were a police officer in the New York Police
right.
Department?
Right. I roughly did 17 years. I started as a police officer. Then I was promoted to detective, then sergeant, then sergeant special assignment. And then lieutenant through my career. On that day of September 11, at the time, I was a sergeant assigned to the Brooklyn South Gang Unit. So we focused mainly on different gangs, whether it was Latin Kings, Crips, Bloods, all different Mexican gangs. So that day, like everyone else, I watched it on TV while I sat with my boys. At the time, it was only Anthony and Dominic. Frank wasn't in the picture yet.
Well, now he is.
Now
like
he is.
I
he's
say,
made, he's made a splash.
You might see him take Derek Jeter's spot years from now and be the next Derek Jeter. So,
you know, that day, it was funny. I'm watching it, and I actually call my dad. And as we're watching it together, the second plane hits the North Tower. And right then you knew. This was not coincidental. These weren't small aircraft. There was something going on. So we had a report to your assignment, and I remember driving in. I tell people it was like an end-of-the-world scenario. I mean, there was no one on the road. Picture coming through the Verrazano Narrows Bridge with nobody at the toll plaza. You would just show your shield and go.
Wow.
There was no one on the roads. There was, by the time we started heading in, there was no traffic at all. You had to get to your base, get into your uniform, and we headed over. And again, there's one term I use. To me, it always sticks with me. When I got there, I always say that to me, the best part of New York City was lying on its side, and that was the Twin Towers.
Right.
You know.
So, Frank, this is Daryl. How long did it take you to write the book?
I would say to right now, it's taken us about two years.
Two and a half years.
Two and a half years to write it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because you learn your first time is the hardest time. Mm-hmm. There's different styles of writing that we're supposed to adhere to. And if you don't know this, we didn't. So we were actually, we had to rewrite the book at least three times.
Oh, wow.
You know, to get exactly right, and including photos and...
taking our own photos, going back to the landfill. It was definitely an experience. And a learning experience for me, more so than anything.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, after you're now, when does the book exactly come out?
Right now, you can go on, the website's up and running. It's called FromLandfillToHallowedGround.com. Mm-hmm. You could pre-order the book.
Okay.
The book won't officially be out till they've given us two dates, March 5th or March 10th. It's our choice. Mm-hmm. I guess they're going to try to do a big press push between now and then.
Oh, okay.
But it'll be at all the book distributors. Will be at the Barnes & Nobles, hopefully in the airports. Again, where we'd love to have it is up at the new Memorial Museum at 9/11. That's where we think it should be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that would be the most fitting. So that's what the book company's pushing for.
Right.
And we would like to get up there, too. We have to go up there. I haven't gone up.
Yeah, no, I actually have a friend who moved to Florida right after.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him. He's like, I cannot come back to New York City.
Wow.
It's just a haunting memory.
I was at the, Financial Tower? It's
Freedom Tower, you're talking about.
No. It's the Financial Tower, right? Is there a tower, the Financial Tower?
The new ones?
No, it's not.
The Winter Garden was the Financial Center. That was across the street.
The one that's it's right over the land. You can see, it was right is right next to the Twin Towers.
The Winter Garden, I think he's thinking. Correct.
It's way up there.
One of the big towers.
Yeah, one
of the Twin Towers.
No, not one of the big towers. It was, I think, and I looked. I said, my God, you know, I was up for an interview. It's like maybe about 8 years ago, and I looked. I said, I can't work. I cannot work here. And because I, you know, after what happened with the Twin Towers,
sure,
and
I, absolutely.
You know, God forbid something like that happened again. You know, it just, you know, I couldn't work. But it was one of the, it was an investment group there, and they did stock. So you know, it was scary. You know, after seeing,
oh, sure,
after 9/11 happened, and then going up into one of the towers and looking, like, okay, wow, I can imagine being up there, and I can understand the people in the Twin Towers and how they felt.
You know, I mean, one of the chapters horror is called Personal Effects, and I won't get into, you know, all so much detail, but what a lot of people don't know, Maria knows, is my prom was at the Windows of the World, mm-hmm, at the 110th floor. So that was the last time that I was really there, you know. And I can remember leaning up against the glass and looking down. And it's just frightening, you know. And, you know, I think back, and I can remember people jumping from up that high. And to think about that, that was the better choice.
Right.
That's mind-boggling to me. Mm-hmm. To jump is the better choice,
yeah,
than to stay. So, you know.
Yeah, I remember that day, I was in a meeting. And I'll tell you about the meeting, though. But it was kind of, it was, you know, they said that a plane hit the towers. And I thought it was an accident. You know, I think that's what everybody thought first.
Initially,
yeah,
I
it was
think
an
that
accident.
Was...
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a small plane.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was across the river in Hoboken, mm-hmm, right on the pier. It was a pier that's, I mean, literally was a straight shot to the towers.
Yeah.
And it was filled to capacity with just people from town. And we just stood there and watched. And it was just like one of the most horrific scenes. And, of course, we were right there when the towers came down. I mean, if you ever have a chance to be in Hoboken, kind of go and look at the Freedom Tower now, you'll see how close it kind of is. And, I mean, it was just literally just tears came down with everyone. It was a moment of silence, of craziness, and then, like I say, it was what will Hoboken become for me? But then, like I said, I met Frank in town. He told me this book was coming out, and I thought this would be a perfect thing to have him come on. Have our listeners hear about the book, and of course, when it comes out, purchase it because it's a great book.
Yeah, no, thank you. We want to thank you for having
us. Thank you very much.
It's our pleasure.
Get out there and buy it.
What's that?
Get out there and buy it.
Get out there and buy
it.
Pre-order, yes, yes.
Yeah, definitely you got to read the book. We got a station break coming up in a minute. Joe, you wanted to ask a question?
We have time?
Yeah, we got to ask.
Okay. You call this the world's largest crime scene, and you're a detective. So coming out of here, without giving anything away, was there any forensic learning that, you know, through going through that was there while you were there that you know, learned that added insight, that added depth to, you know, to what went on that day?
You can answer that after our station break. Yeah.
I got time to think.
I have time to think. Give us a call at 609-800-1003 and check us out on our chat room. We'll be right back with Frank Merrill and Maria and the two writers of the book, and we'll be right back. You get to answer some questions. You can give us a call at 609-800-1003. Ask some questions. Give us a call back. Give us a call, and we're out.
Love it. New Jersey's favorite hits every day on Hamilton Radio.
Better than any other station.
Visit PrimalGym.com. Primal Gym has the latest in gym equipment. Primal Gym has the experience in martial arts training, fighting, and workout, and more. Primal Gym is coming to Hamilton Township, New Jersey, Mercer County. Let Jim McCann know you heard this right here on HamiltonRadio.net. And for complete updates, keep tuned to HamiltonRadio.net and PrimalGym.com for the grand opening of Primal Gym in Hamilton Township, New Jersey, Mercer County, New Jersey. That's Primal Gym, PrimalGym.com. Again, PrimalGym.com. That's PrimalGym.com.
Do you take your health seriously? Well, if you do, you need to check out HamiltonRadioNet.my94life.com. And it's spelled HamiltonRadioNet.my90for life.com. Check it out today. Join or shop for the best products for your health. We take your health seriously here at Hamilton Radio.
Hey, once again, you're back with On Fire Show, and here with myself, Daryl Mikkel Brooks,
Joe Siano,
Neil Schloss,
and we're here with Frank Mara.
Mara. He has the hardest time with last names, man.
Yeah,
so,
no, and Maria Bate. I'm saying it right. It's Mara, right?
Mara, yeah.
Yeah, he knew that.
He's saying it right.
My bad. Well, he butchers my last name all the time, so it's kind of funny.
And if you want everybody to give us a call, if you want to ask some questions, 609-800-1003, and go to our chat room. You can ask some questions through our chat room, and Joe had answered
questions. We had, you know, wonderful discussion off, you know, while in between the breaks, but we asked the question, I think, and you were touching, expanding upon that, I think, is that, you know, what type of insights, learning did you come as a forensic detective, but also, you know, what is the source material of this book besides things? I know you were talking about meeting other people and your journey about that. You want to talk about the people you met and, you know, the learnings that you had about 9/11?
Starting with some of the other officers who were up at the landfill, or as they called it, they referred to it as the Hill, and we talked to two brothers, Mike and Frank Tagano. Both were up at the landfill. One worked on the sifters. The other officer worked as a forensics detective. Their experiences alone and what they went through was amazing. And we kind of went through their journey with them. He spoke, the forensic detective, which I thought was very interesting about what they looked for when it went to the forensics tent, that they had to determine the difference between animal bones and animal carcass as opposed to human remains. So they had to have anthropologists up there. Some of the things that they found was, you know, amazing. How some things disintegrated and certain things just didn't. You know, a lot of the experience was great. We spoke to psychiatrists.
Right, Dr. Richard Levinson about post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a terrible thing, and you know, I've never been diagnosed with it, but I think I've had periods of it, you know, over the years. just to expand on what Maria was saying, and to expand, Joe, on what you had asked earlier, what I learned was anthropologists. Because there was restaurants in those buildings, you had to be able to decipher between human bone and animal bone. So, and that, you know, that's not something that the average NYPD officer is going to deal with on a day-to-day basis. But you had to deal with, you know, that was part of the investigation up there. You'd meet those guys, and they could tell you whether or not it was an animal or a human remain.
Now, Maria, from an educational perspective, what do especially high school, college students would gain from reading this book?
I think that, you know, a lot of time, you know, I think part of the learning experience here is that the kids would get to listen to someone firsthand, someone who was there. They're a part of history now, you know, real history, not just the history that they keep reading about over and over and over again. It's very real, and it's very new. I thought that as a book, it would be a great extra book for a syllabus who's doing American history, and they're doing a 9/11 class. They're doing classes on all of this all the time. In the high school level, even on the junior high school level, teaching in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, I think 8th grade children are at a level where they can appreciate, respect the fact that these people have gone through this. A lot of them in Staten Island, you know, teaching where I am, their parents were there. Their parents were officers there. Their parents were up at the landfill. So there's a connection there.
Well, I should ask you to come to the Millstone Board of Ed meeting and present that idea, because we should try to do incorporate it into our educational perspective, because there's I assume you've met other people in Millstone that were affected by 9/11.
Yes. That's a good idea, too.
After reading this book, what would people take away from reading your book as a memory of the 9/11 in the landfill?
You know what, Darryl? I want people to walk away and say, wow, I didn't know that. And I want people to be more aware of what the first responders went through, the guys who are sick, the guys who have died. You know, I also think that the memory should stay very focused. People shouldn't forget so quickly. And the book also touches on, like I said, there's a lot of families out there that have no closure. And, you know, I don't know how that, you know, I don't know how I would have handled. Do I have wanted to receive a phone call that something of my loved one was found, or not want to have received that phone call? I mean, these people have reached heartache on levels that none of us, I believe, sitting here could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to go away.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so that's what I want people to remember from this book.
You know, well, you know, one of the questions that I like to ask you about 9/11, and, you know, when, you know, kids that were maybe 2 or 3 years old at the time, or 5 years old, who actually may have seen it or seen it on television, you know, how do they think now? It's 2015, 2001 was, you know, 9/11. Right. You know, what do especially the younger generation think about 9/11 after they, you know, may have seen it or, you know, heard about it, but exactly didn't see what happened? Yeah, and how do they, you know, just how do they feel?
Well, I remember, you teach 8th grade, yeah, right? How old are they, 12?
No, they're 13, 12.
So they're not even born yet either.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are far removed, mm-hmm, but not removed enough. When you live in New York City, it's a reminder constantly,
right,
of what took place. And when 9/11 comes around, you know, your schools do things to memorialize. You know, the city does things to memorialize. People go down there to pay their respects, or your next-door neighbor was lost there, or the guy across the street, or the cop down the block is sick from having worked up at the landfill. So they're very connected in New York City. I think that it's our job, you know, as parents, to remind the kids of what went on every year when it comes around, to remember. Because it is still fresh and it is still new. The Freedom Towers just went up. I mean, it took forever to get that whole area together and still working. So I think that as much as we think they may not be as in tune to it because they were so young, I think it's still part of their history at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's fresh history.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, it's fresh history. Like I said, it's where every year we have events on that day. There's continuous stories coming off of that. I mean, mm-hmm, I feel like the war side of it's still going on. I mean, I think we're still in Afghanistan and Iraq and all over the Middle East because of this.
It's sort of like our Pearl Harbor.
That's a great comparison.
On
the East Coast.
East Coast, Pearl Harbor, because, you know, every day it's every, you know, year we celebrate, you know, we don't celebrate, but we memorialize the Pearl Harbor Day, and the presidents and governors and family members go back to Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
And, you know, because, you know, some of their great-grandfathers, were
Were
in that era.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things is that every time we've been, you know, after Pearl Harbor, we went through World War II, and after this, the 9/11, we went in Afghanistan, Iraq, and it's just, it's kind of, it's wondering, you know, about this country and about the world and where it's headed.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, 14 years later, of course, the wound gets easier from this, but at the same time, like, there's the endless wars. I think, like I say, there's hopefully a time for peace, and everyone goes back to seeing the joy in life and seeing the good in things. And like I said, seeing Frank's son play baseball is a joy. Mm-hmm. at the same time, like I said, this book is definitely something that is gives you insight into the aftermath.
Yeah.
Again, the book is classified American History, 21st Century. You know, and me and Marie have had numerous discussions, and like Daryl said, it's got to be up there with Pearl Harbor, World War One, World War Two, Vietnam. It has to be. And I think the kicker on with us, everyone here, it happened in our backyard. So like Neil said, it's tough. It's not going away. It's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. So you know, when what was your thinking in the beginning stages of writing the book? I mean, did you decide I want to write a book? Was it in your head, or would you just take down notes, or what was the thought of writing a book in your head?
Or did Maria keep saying, I think this would be a great book?
I mean, was it something you just...
Maria kept on saying, I can help you. I never forget. Maria kept saying, I said, all right, but I got it. Well, and to answer Daryl's question, a lot of thoughts going on in your head, a lot.
You just write them down.
And you that's the crazy thing. You just got to write them down, you know. And it's funny you bring that up. I remember I was watching some songwriter be interviewed. I forget who it was. And she said, you know what? If a thought comes to me at 4 in the morning, I get up and I jot it down and I go back to sleep. But it's almost the same thing. We really wanted to push a show, where are all these first responders today? But
right.
we got no bites on that.
Right.
But as we thought of that, we've had all these stories that I must have had bottled up. And the reason I say that is when we went to go interview Frank Tagano, who was a crime scene detective for many years, and he worked up at the landfill, he triggered something during our interview about seeing a woman up at the landfill handing out sandwiches and coffee over by the sifters. Now, if you ever worked up there, mm-hmm. the dust, the methane gas, the asbestos that was blowing around, it was physically impossible. You know, but that was something that triggered, and if you read the book, the chapter's called Red Cross Worker. And the thought process is this is a spirit who we all saw. And I saw her, he saw her, and here's someone who I hadn't spoke to in years. And I'm sitting at his kitchen table. And you,
chills go through.
Neil's
you.
Looking at me right now because he read
– Yeah, I
Neil's
read the
Neil's one
book
of the lucky ones. He read the book, so you know what I'm talking
oh,
about.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's
– And again, and she's looking at me too because if you get to know Maria, Maria's got a whole medium side to her, and that's a day for – that's a story for another day. But here's a guy I hadn't seen in years, man. And he stops in the middle and he goes, do you remember the stories about the Red Cross worker, the woman dressed in 1950s? And I just stopped and paused, and I'm like, yeah, you got to be kidding me. He goes, I saw her numerous times walking towards me, and then she was gone. I said, I saw her too. And I remember one time we were mustering up, there were some detectives from the Bronx, and they went up to a supervisor and said, hey, Sarge, you know, yesterday some lady was trying to give us sandwiches and coffee around the sifters. Well, if you remember, I mean, you're looking at me because you read it.
I read the part, but yeah. I mean, you get a piece of it, but now hearing it from your voice,
and
it's like,
I
wow.
I guess just to answer Daryl's overall question, yeah. All these stories were bottled up inside, mm-hmm. and with Maria's help, they just started to come out, and then you just start to jot down, you start to write down. But you don't have a book at that point. All you have is a lot of loose-leaf paper with a lot of different stories on it, and you got to somehow put it together. You try to timeline it and put it together and make something that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think we have. I think we've accomplished that.
I know you did. Thank I mean, you. Like I said, it was. It's an easy read. It's a great read. I mean, you, I didn't want to put the book down. I didn't want to put the book down. It was like, all right, what's the next chapter going to talk about? And like I said, I read through pretty quickly. And for some of you that listened about last week's show, it took me a year and a half to read the Atlas Shrugged book because it's so big and so much to it. This was such a good read, emotional. There's the ups and downs in it because you will hear just stories that, of course, there's no conclusions to it. So I don't know if Frank's going to come with a second book, kind of adding on to the parts of the stories that didn't really conclude but left you thinking. So, I mean, is that something that would happen?
I just think that's one of the haunting effects of this book, that there's no way to sequel it up because, again, you're the lucky one. You read the book. You know
right.
those stories.
Right.
And those were one once-in-a-lifetime relationships that lasted up to 6 hours to 5 minutes, but left lasting impressions that in one of the chapters I write, I don't know how I'm not on somebody's couch right now,
right.
walking, and the book publisher, they didn't want me to put that in there, so I couldn't put that in there, but I think you understand what I'm talking about. You know?
Well, it's going to be like probably 10 years from now, Frank and Maria are going to be like, I remember being on this radio show talking about our first book, and now we've written 20 more, and we don't want to be back on that show. We're going to CBS big time. So, but we're glad they were able to come to this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Show.
If anyone has some questions, give us a call at 609-800-1003. That's 609-800-1003. How's the chat line looking?
Chat line's great. You could join the chat room at hamiltonradio.net. Click on HR chat room to come in as a guest. If you want to come in as a named user, you have to click on register, and Ruben here will approve your request, and then you could join.
So, Frank, what's also the website?
Oh, from landfill to hallowedground.com.
Largest crime scene in America.
Largest crime scene in America.
It gives a good perspective on the book. There's some quotes. It's where it can also be pre-ordered, whether it's single orders or bulk orders.
Well, we're definitely going to put it on the On Fire, onfirenn.com.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get it on hamiltonradio.net.
And so, you know, Fran, I'd just like to ask you questions. You were there. You were a sergeant at the time. How did it make you feel when you saw the towers coming down? Was it
helpless? It was completely helpless. It's happening on your watch, and there's really nothing you can do about it. And, you know, I got to give credit to my wife, Laura, who Neil knows. My wife works in the engineering field, and she kind of told me, she knew the way jet fuel burned. She said that she had an idea that they were going to come down, but for me, I was just totally taken back by it. I never thought. Again,
yeah, people. I mean, you know, people still question it. I mean,
yes,
it's a question that will live on forever.
Oh, yeah, Ron Paul crew.
Well, we touch upon that.
Ron Paul crew.
We touch about that in the book in one of the chapters.
Who blew down the tower?
He does go into that in the book as well.
We go into that in the book, and
the conspiracy.
Not the conspiracy side. Part.
We get a little a couple of chapters we like to flirt with conspiracy because of what you heard and what was presented to you. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
One of the chapters, though, I accept the conspiracy because it comes from those who've recovered no one, and they're looking, again, dude, they're looking for outlets. You know, they're looking for reasons, so they talk about, you know, maybe it was more than just planes. You know, I don't want to get crazy with it. I think you know what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying, and you know, it's terrible, but you know what has happened, and you know, I've heard all the conspiracies, and you know, you never know what's really happening. You know, I remember the fact that when the towers came down, I was like, wow. You know, is this real? And you know, it was this real, and you know, and there were no planes flying around, and they shut down the all the airplanes. But
yeah, a friend of mine actually was in a small plane off Long Island.
Had to come to
And he said that the radio silence happened, and it was like just you got to land.
But they got the Bush made sure you know he got Bin Laden's family out. You know, got them all around and flew them out throughout the country. That was one. that was one of the strangest things. But, you know, no, for real, am I right? Yeah.
And then you wonder why.
Yeah, you know, the Bin Laden's family, Bush got, you know, there was someone part of his Bin Laden family, he made sure they all got out the country. And, you know, and you know, I remember watching, what was Bush's War, and he talked about, what was the, Colin Powell talked about, he couldn't come into, you know, He was in Europe somewhere, and he couldn't fly here. He couldn't get here yet because it had shut down all the planes. Right. And, you know, and that's one of the things, you know, about what's happening in America. And, you know, we go in, well, why did it happen? Who really did it? Who was really behind it? You know, it's true that I think, what was it? How many people flew on the planes? Nine. It was all together nine.
Oh, you mean the...
I don't recall the amount of terrorists. Yeah. What is it? On all three planes together?
Yeah, all three planes.
That I don't recall.
And, you know, it's probably was, I think it was like 12 individuals. And, you know, they said they plotted this thing in England.
Right.
Yeah, in England. You know, and at least 80% of these terrorists were from Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And, you know, nothing happened in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, you know, and even with the... also, with the plane that went down in Pennsylvania, did American government, did we shoot that plane down?
Right, right.
You know, did the whole story of, you know, this rock and roll, what was it, did that really happen?
Right.
And so it's one of these
things. A lot of unanswered questions.
Right.
Because if you look at the Bush's War and on PBS, what was the Vice President, Cheney, said that he gave permission to shoot the plane down.
Really?
On PBS, but he didn't. You know, we don't know what happened, but he said he did give permission. If that plane was coming, you know, towards the Washington, shoot it down.
But right. It was never confirmed.
It never confirmed. Never confirmed.
Well, yeah. Steve from Virginia said, "You sure it was the Bin Laden family?"
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Where'd you hear that?
PBS.
PBS, okay.
Yeah. I mean, PBS. You can't get any real in PBS.
That's true, right?
Yeah, PBS. But it, who family could have been? Obama family? You know what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do want to give condolences out to guest 37552 on the chat room. He said his brother was on the Pennsylvania plane. Good show, guys. We lost him and with no plane found. He said.
What?
No plane found.
Not recovered, right?
No plane found.
That was in Shanksville, PA.
Shanksville. Which, no plane was found.
They're in the process of building a visitor center right now.
No plane was found. What do you mean no plane was found? They found the plane.
Are you sure? Am I sure?
Do I text and say, you know, I'm Osama Bin Laden's brother and... Yeah, we did leave the country, and you know, text that. You know, I don't know who's that on the text.
There are just many questions unanswered.
I'm just saying. You said that's his brother from.
That's what he said.
I just
want
to say, as a filmmaker, and
speaking to the mic, Ruben.
Speaking to the mic.
They won't hear you.
Yeah,
so.
You don't hear all the time.
We got Ruben, our producer here.
Here I am. I just want to extend on the comment. I just want to say. As a filmmaker and in a studying film and doing props where I can actually make things look believable than what they appear to see the eye. And, I mean, there's no question about what happened because I remember watching from my house early morning. My mom was there that morning at the hospital on, I think, 19th Street. And I remember her calling me panicking and everything like that. And everybody's mind running wild, and of course that day. And then as time went on, and more investigations that happened, there are a lot of conspiracies that had happened. And that one thing I know saying that there was no, even though there was, because here's the thing, the one in Pennsylvania, and I've seen a lot of plane crashes, and usually there's planes don't disintegrate because planes are made of titanium and aluminum. A very light aluminum. The inner skeleton is made of titanium. titanium is very, very rigid. And even if a plane crashes, the plane could still stay intact. Look at the ones that crash into the oceans. They're pretty much staying intact and people survive, like the one TWA that fell in the Hudson. Not TWA. It was...
But, yeah.
Although you're saying the one that landed in the Hudson.
Yeah, the one in the Hudson,
but,
right.
Yeah, but that's kind of... I'm just saying water that, and ground is totally different, Ruben.
What, oh, I know. Well, I'm trying to explain...
You know, if you, fly in water... And you jump out of a plane in water, and you jump out of a plane and hit the ground.
No, my point is, planes, right, surface tension. Thank you, Jim. Yeah. You know, what I'm saying is planes are tested for crash purposes. I mean, even if you blew them out of the air, they're still pieces. They found pieces of the shuttle.
Yeah.
Well, that was a comment from the guest, the chat room. And, of course, we want more guests on the chat room.
Oh, yes, we want more guests on the chat room. And those who are just signed in, you are activated.
But also, as a detective, you know, I want to talk about the people don't know about the other plane that blew up over the it was in New York.
I know what you're referring to. There was one in Queens,
In Queens that blew up and killed some people.
I didn't get a
ground.
Chance to go there. My father, really responded there. That just fell completely down.
That was the one that was at Howard Beach.
Yes, yeah. It just fell completely straight down. He said when he got there, there was still people in their chairs. It was just surreal.
Wow. And people can say that was an explosion, but they didn't. They just said it was a mechanical failure. Something happened, but come on, right? It happened what? 3 days after 9/11?
Yeah, close. I don't remember exactly. Yeah.
Right, and right around the corner from here is the Hamilton Post Office. At the same time that all went down, you remember, is when the anthrax got into the Hamilton Post Office. That was closed down for about 5 years as they cleaned that out piece by piece. But it just seemed like all the world was going to hell. You know, we were getting attacked from every corner, and some of them weren't even related to each other. It was... one was an actual accident, one was a terrorist attack, and one was internal.
What was the accident?
The one in Queens.
No, that's the Jubilee.
Well, that's what I believe.
if planes are, things are happening, and planes just happen to fall out the sky just and land and blow up,
there's
a lot.
These things happen.
Oh, it happens.
Planes go up, planes go down.
And we did invite Frank and Maria back once the book is coming out.
Oh, yeah, so, we're going to know about the book.
I'd love to come back, and we could just dig real deep. And
listen, there's a chapter. I mean, did you read the vending carts chapter?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to be right up Daryl's. That's going to be right up Daryl's. That hinges on big time conspiracy. I can see he's smiling already about that.
Oh, Neil excited too. He's Ron Paul, and they believe in that somebody blew up the other tower, right? One of the other buildings, right?
There was another building that did come down. The same way as the Twin Towers did. So people do question that. I mean, I love to read every side of the argument, so I can see their thoughts and figure out if. Something makes sense versus doesn't make sense. So when it doesn't make sense, then you question.
Did it make sense?
It's strange. Definitely strange. It felt like it was demolished, but there is people saying, yes, we did demolish that building because it was there was no way it was going to be repaired, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, but those are questions out there, and call the Ron Paul supporters, the people who question everything.
Okay,
Come on.
You hear from the Jewish Jedi.
The Jewish Jedi. All right, that's me. Jewish Jedi.
Well, I mean, if I told you I worked up at that landfill for 6 months, mm-hmm. and I don't remember seeing – someone could call up and say, you know what, Frank, you were wrong. I don't remember seeing office chairs, file cabinets, computers. Now, you're talking about 220 stories of office, and they claim it was all pulverized as it pancaked on top of one another.
Yeah,
right. I don't remember seeing much of that, right? We talk about that all the time.
And other officers didn't – Mike DeGannis, I didn't see – in his interview with us, he doesn't remember during the sifting seeing any computer desks or computers or file cabinets, anything, any of that nature.
Well, if you have a question in the chat room, please ask the questions.
And one of the conspiracies, they said Netanyahu made a phone call, though, the Jewish buddies to get out.
What they said? I never saw that one. That didn't hit my Facebook post.
It hit your Facebook.
No, no.
You didn't get the call?
You didn't get the call.
I didn't get the call.
The day before they get out, they got a call from Israel.
No. Actually, I thought it says, go to Hoboken. Make sure you're there.
See? So. All Italian people and everybody else died.
Yeah, no. But all seriousness, back to the book. Like I said, it is worth the read. It's worth buying. I'm glad Frank and Marie were able to come tonight. The chat room is filling up right now, so if you do have questions, please ask a question in the chat room if you want to call. What's the number, Daryl?
609-800-1003, and that wasn't in the anti-Semitic. You know, I know. You never know.
That's all right.
I want to make sure. Nothing. You know,
listen, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones. Right? I love you guys no matter what.
No, we're just having fun. Of course. Give us a call. Or it's just been amazing. It's about 9:47. I think we're going to a station break right about now. We'll be right back. This is On Fire Show. And give us a call, 609-800-1003. Any questions? And we'll be right back.
The best hits.
Oh, I love it. I listen to it all the time.
And forgotten hits.
The music is by far the best.
All. On one radio station. This is Hamilton Radio.
Hey, you're back with On Fire Show. This is Darryl Mikel Brooks.
Joe Ciano.
Neil Schloss.
And we're here with Frank Merrow and Maria.
Abate.
Abate.
I'm glad you didn't butcher her last name.
Yeah, Abate. That's a nice name.
Thank you.
Yeah. So guys, so you guys were living, you were in Brooklyn at the time? Where
no,
were you living?
No, I was living in Staten Island in Great Kills.
And you were living?
Also in Staten Island in Princess Bay.
And moving down to Central Jersey, was that part of just trying to get away from that 9/11 moment, or different reason you ended up moving in such a beautiful community?
For me, it was definitely it was time for change. By 2004, we were done, ready for, you know, spread our wings, yeah. Better air,
and
quality.
You have three kids, you
a
said, right?
Of everything, yeah.
And what's her names?
Alexa, she's 12. Michael, he's 11, and Delilah is 7.
Nice. Frank, you have three.
I have three boys. I have Anthony, 19. What's up, Ant? Go Seton Hall Pirates. Dominic is 14. What's up, Dom? Allentown High School, freshman football. Went to the varsity, went to the state championship.
Yes, they
this
did.
Year. Lost to Delsey. Very good team, but they went to the states first time. And big Frank Marrow, good old number two.
Nice.
Has to wear number two for everything.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
But I was, like Maria, I was looking for a little more elbow room with three boys.
Right.
And I heard that Neil Schloss was living in Millstone.
Yeah.
Raising chickens.
Banging on drums. Raising chickens,
banging on drums.
Yeah, banging on drums.
So me and Mrs. Marrow decided to pick up and to move this way, and it worked out. My sister and parents ended up moving this way also.
Right.
Oh.
And as far as writing a book, because, I mean, it's people – I hate writing. I mean, math is my – I love math and the CPA. So what does it take to finally get over that hump to say, like, let me do it and write and come out with something?
You know what it actually is? And Marie is going to – it's just getting through life. Life gets in the way. We always had to make time to get together. Maria works full time. That was our biggest challenge, is finding time to sit down. But when we did, you know, we get along really well. We clicked. We got a great friendship. You know, we fight. We'll argue. But – you know, it's good teamwork.
It's good teamwork.
Right.
If you're going to write on your own, it's a challenge. You really should have somebody who is good with pronunciation and grammar.
Right.
To look it over, because when it goes to a publishing company, they're going to rip you up if every step of the way. Like I said, you know.
I feel like my English teacher over and over again. I got ripped up all the time.
Well, yeah.
Like,
I mean, like
grammar,
I said, we had to rewrite that book three times.
You know? It's nice because, you know, just... You know, when you write stuff, you know, sometimes, I mean, for the most part, I love to write, whether it was fiction or nonfiction. But when you're writing and you're working with someone or you're working with a partner, it's nice to get feedback right away. It's immediate feedback. You know, I like it this way. I don't like it this way. I'd rather it this way. So it was really a nice journey with the book. So I definitely think that we definitely do another one.
Yeah. How many publishing houses did you have to pitch it to?
I sent it to about five. Oh. And Brown's Books is based in Dallas, Texas. They're around about 20 years. And like I said, Dr. Janet Harris, she embraced it because I believe she was on the flight that hit the Pentagon, and she gave up her seat. So I guess she had something in the game.
Tying it back to her life.
Into it.
Right.
And, you know, for me... Which really brought it full circle is the fact that Maria actually embraced the stories. It was like She believed in me. I had known her. We were friends. But I sat down and I gave her all these stories, and she believed in it. And nothing was even more believable. We went back, and you read, again, you're the lucky one. You read.
I am lucky.
Me and Maria actually went back covert. We had to sneak around. You're not allowed up there. We're a little disappointed, which I just want to, if we could touch on this. There's no memorial up there at all. And it's a shame. Mm-hmm. We went up there. We tried to get in. They wouldn't let us in.
No.
We questioned the security guard up and down. He says there's no memorial up there. He wouldn't know if there were plans. I mean, they've built soccer fields.
Recreational fields.
I mean, there's not even a memorial there?
No.
No, seriously?
No memorial right there on that site?
And I know there are groups. There's groups on Facebook who are pushing for it. Because, let's face it, it's like a cemetery without tombstones. A lot of people believe that their loved ones' ashes are still up there, and you know what? I believe it, too. And it's unfortunate. You look at the hill now, which was the reference made to where the sifting went place. It's all overgrown with landscape. We have photos from in the book that we had to work our way around to get up there because they wouldn't let us in, you know. We were willing to get arrested that day because we thought it was that important.
Of course.
But we didn't.
We tried.
Tried to get arrested? That's always fun.
Yeah, when you try, you never do.
That's the truth. And that's a lesson for everyone listening. Try and you won't get arrested.
Oh, yeah. So Maria, are you, after you helped write the book, is there any plans for any other projects? I mean, did it like click on a bulb in your head?
It did, because now I want to do he talks about all this, now I'm just kind of engrossed in this whole cop detective whole world.
Oh, okay.
There's so much out there. There's so many different directions you can go that, why stop now?
Mm-hmm.
Just keep going.
World's your oyster.
Absolutely.
That's great.
So, once again, is there anything in the chat room? Anything exciting?
Actually, exciting is some future guests, just so you know.
Uh-huh.
We have Jordan Page, a musician, big activist in the Ron Paul movement. He'll be on in 2 weeks. I'm waiting for confirmation for early February for Adam Kokesh. Adam Kokesh is a huge activist in the Liberty Movement. So those are some guests coming up. But as far as the chat room goes, hold on. We have had some beeps. So
is that the noise I hear?
Yeah. Every time you hear that beep, it was just a conversation between guests of it. They have been to the memorial in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if any of you guys have been to that memorial.
No.
So, but I did lose friends in it. I had two guys from high school that were killed from the towers and a gentleman from Hoboken that I knew. He was actually on the top of the tower working for, I think it was the manager for an ice cream company.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he was stationed.
You know, I was watching something on Netflix about this lady, and exactly she was a... claiming that she was a survivor.
Right.
And she wound up lying about being a survivor. I can't think of her name. She was from some country, and she came over here, and everybody thought that she was a survivor. And she was on television with the mayor and the governor, and she was a part of this big group, and she basically lied about being a survivor. She just wanted attention.
Yeah.
I mean, those sad stories like that when people...
As far as the book goes, I know Frank mentioned people coming to the landfill to...
Correct.
Can you just hit on that a little bit? Just any stories outside the book that you have memories of, people coming that left a mark on you?
Well, again, in the book, we write a chapter called Personal Effects, and there's an in-depth story there that's extremely moving about someone who comes. So I don't want to get into... too much detail,
right.
But it was every day. It was constant. You know, you had I worked at the Auto Pound, so all the cars that were abandoned
that day
at red lights, people just got out and ran, left in parking garages, just parked on the street. They came to us. We would vouch at them. FBI would come and put a orange number on it, like that was so important. But so you would get people who would show up and, you know, they knew they had lost a loved one and they wanted the car back or they wanted something from the car
mm-hmm.
that would remind them of that person. And you would try to be as accommodating as you possibly could be, mm-hmm. considering the circumstances. And they were a lot of them were heart wrenching moments, you know, that I recall. And we talk about it in the book. We talk about some really heavy ones yeah. that stood out in my mind.
Right.
You know, the book for me has really been like therapy. I enjoy talking about it. I enjoy talking about the stories.
Sure,
it makes me feel better.
Right.
I hope it's a success, but I, you know, the fact that I guess we've even gotten to this point is
a
success. It's pretty exciting to begin with, too.
Mm-hmm. And when you walk into Barnes & Noble, you can go look for your book, which is,
absolutely,
I mean,
you know.
I'm always impressed with authors,
you know,
that they took that time to get something down.
To write
to
it down,
pass,
put it on
pass
paper.
History on.
And you know, think it out and get it down. And, you know, it was a surreal time in my life. Mm-hmm.
I like the way you said that, you know, to pass history on.
Of course.
I think it's a big deal.
It well, is. That's the bottom line. It is. It is history. It should be.
We haven't read anything about the landfill. So it was kind of a nice direction to go.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, growing up and passing that landfill, I always knew it was just where the garbage was taken. Mm-hmm. So now it's a new place that has meaning.
Question.
Yes.
Was there any conflict between, I know how the NYPD can be, and the FBI and other forces that were over that landfill or even in that area? Was there any problems, conflicts, disagreements?
Just internal
power structure.
Yeah,
I mean,
but nothing.
Power.
Again, I was the rank of sergeant, so mm-hmm. nothing really got to my level. There was always who pumped their chest out further than the other guy. You know, if we did something, they'd question it.
Yeah.
If we did, like, again, I was my job was to intake the autos, look them over, and vouch them, safekeep them, because mm-hmm. you didn't know what was going on with them. You didn't know if insurance was going to crush them or get rid of them. You didn't know. And then the FBI would come down and say, well, we got our own system. We're going to take orange spray paint. We're going to number them in orange paint.
Right,
that's a good system, you know, and we're going to keep a list. You know, so silly stuff like that, you know, that it would go back and forth. But nothing that tumultuous that I recall.
Yeah,
know?
Well, people are asking, where can I get the book? Which, of course, if you go to hamiltonradio.net, click on the On Fire show, you'll see a banner there. You can click on that, and that'll bring you to the website to do a pre-purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can pre-purchase.
How much is the book?
$18.95. But it will be ebook.
Ebook.
Book reader, Apple.
And Kindle.
Yeah, Kindle. Mm-hmm. It goes. Do you remember the pricing on those?
No, I don't remember.
No.
Not offhand.
That's what's a little cheap. It's probably about $12.99 to $15.99,
right.
I believe.
I'm sure you're excited because I know when authors go out, you get to probably go speak at high schools, colleges, different events. I mean, I'm sure that's going to be so exciting.
Yes, we're hoping.
Looking forward to it.
Now, how can they get in touch with you for stuff like that? Because this radio station, of course, if you're listening now, you have the pleasure of listening to it live. But also, we do rebroadcast. There's on demand at hamiltonradio.net. Click on the On Fire show, and their on demand button will bring up. I think right now, 10 of our previous shows are listed.
14 on On Fire. A 12 now on demand.
12 on demand.
Joe has about 14 on
YouTube.
So we're going to, and when we post this one, there'll be pictures of Frank and Maria on the YouTube channel.
Yes.
So we're really excited how we keep growing as well. And like I say, this will be one of our parts of history.
Okay.
Because if we don't speak, no one hears us, right?
That's correct.
Right.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
But do you guys have any final words on on this?
Buy the book.
Ladies first.
Well, first off, I thank all of you guys for having us on. Really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure.
And I really just, I just want people to not just buy it. I want them to read it.
Yeah.
I want them to, you know, kind of go through the moments that Frank went through in the time he was there and kind of remember what everybody went through up there and all that they gave.
Mm-hmm.
Some, like you said, you know, some gave all gave, you know. What was the expression you gave me?
Some gave all, but some. All gave some.
Mm-hmm. You know, so.
And should people add this to their like book clubs?
Absolutely.
And have a discussion on it because probably is a lot to talk about.
Oh yeah.
So,
definitely.
And Frank, would you call in as the author to answer questions for book clubs?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And they can contact you how?
They can contact us, both me and Marie, through the website very easily. The website's extremely detailed.
Mm-hmm.
They can get in touch with us anytime and we'll answer up. I just hope that the reader, like I said earlier, takes from this something they didn't know, because I firmly believe this is a part of American history that shouldn't be forgotten. It should be remembered. Tragic events happened that day, but the tragedy didn't end that day for a lot. It continued days and months, and it continues years later for a lot. Let's remember our first responders. Let's remember those who have died. Let's remember those who are sick. And I even tell law enforcement today, if you weren't working then, but you met somebody who was, talk to them about it, you know? Speak to them about it. Get their perspective on what happened. And a few people looked at me and said, wow, I didn't even realize. I said, yeah, absolutely, I said. They were there. I said, you weren't there. I said, I was there. I said, I wish I wasn't. I wish that day never occurred. But it did. And here we are, and I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Daryl and Joe. I want to thank Neil for meeting them.
Oh, it's my
hanging
pleasure.
Hanging with him at baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming up to me and saying, hey, is that your kid?
That's
he
right.
He said, yeah, that's my kid.
Yeah.
But that's how we met. And I only bring that up because that's exactly how we met. You came up to me and said that.
And it's my pleasure having you guys on. I mean,
thank
like
you.
I say, it was great.
We'll definitely help promote your book.
Thank you very much. We love
Take
to come
care.
Back.
God bless you guys. Keep it up.
We love to come back. We love to come in.
Absolutely.
Anything.
So after March, was it 5th or 10th?
Or
5th or 10th. So you'll let me know.
Marie's got to email the book company this week.
It's all me.
It's all on Maria.
It's all on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, appreciate you guys coming on.
Thank you.
Thank all right.
And like I said,
take care.
Okay. You'll be able to tell people to listen to the on demand.
I always do.
All right.
All right. This is On Fire's show. We'll be right back.
Can you improve a great thing? Sure you can. Come listen to a station breaking records with great new shows beyond music. When you hear Dad say, "Don't turn that off," that's impressive. Home of true variety.
On Tuesday, January 27th, the On Fire Show's guest will be Jordan Page. Jordan is a Ron Paul supporter and musician. Don't miss this exciting show right here on HamiltonRadio.net, channel HR2.
If you want whole foods and more natural products while making your family healthier, visit 2285475.myforevergreen.org. That's 2285475.myforevergreen.org. Do it today.
Feeling down, depressed, just don't feel like getting out of the house anymore?
We'll do it anyway. Sounds like it's time. TicketsTime.com, that is. TicketsTime.com has tickets for sports, concerts, and theater just waiting for you to buy. Did your favorite concert sell out? We have tickets at TicketsTime.com. Did you miss your favorite team's last game? Don't miss the next one. Log on to TicketsTime.com. Is there a play you've been dying to see but haven't had the time? Well, make the time at TicketsTime.com. Everyone needs some relaxation time, so remember to make some time at TicketsTime.com.
Hey, you're back with On the Fire, and we'd like to thank Frank Merrow and Maria.
Abate,
yes, from the book.
From Landfill to Hallowed Ground.
Landfill to Hallowed Ground. You got to go check it out. Go to the website. Go to On the Fire. Go to HamiltonRadio.com.
Net.
And you get to see it.
Click on our banner.
Our banner, On Fire.
And you'll see on top their banner.
Okay, yes. And so that was a great show. We got about 15 minutes. Anything else we really wanted to talk about and some issues? You know, it's you know, if you want to still talk about some of the things with Dr. Bernard Lafayette, it was pretty awesome. And matter of fact, he just called me. So it's, you know, it's one of the things that, you know, when you get to hear about a person that actually sat in a room with Dr. King, chilled out, had fun with Dr. King. You know, both him and Dr. King, he smoked a pipe. Bernard Lafayette and Martin Luther King smoked cigarettes. And you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because when I met him, it's kind of those are the questions I wanted to ask,
yeah.
Like stuff that you, it's so when I got to meet Gary Johnson down in Tampa, he was swarmed by people, and of course you got to be like, what's a good question that just will break the ice? So of course I asked Gary Johnson how's his golf game, but Dr. Bernard Lafayette, I wanted to know, being sort of a friend of Martin Luther King, what it was like what drove him to get involved and be part of this whole movement. mm-hmm. and what a difference it made.
Mm-hmm. He would tell me, like, Martin Luther King was just like an average person. He was a jokester. It was a brother. Like, he was like a best friend, a brother to him. And, you know, they had a lot of fun times. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they would do is they would go to the marches and protest. But after the marching and protests, that he said that they would have a good time. They would go out and enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. Bunch of them would, you know, have cookouts and do things with the family, and it was exciting. And when you hear about, especially Dr. Bernard Lafayette, who's a complete genius. I mean, this man was a coordinator for the Poor People's Campaign. He was a coordinator for SNCC, and that's what he was. He was the guy that, when you needed something done,
right,
he was the one to do it.
He took a leading position and said, this is the strategy. Let's stick with the strategy. Just like we talk about freedom, it's a strategy that says, government has no rights over us. Mm-hmm. Let's start this movement. Mm-hmm. Adam Kokesh coming on in February is going to be a good guest to hear those words.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Page also, mm-hmm. that's coming on in 2 weeks. But it's funny because meeting Dr. Bernard Lafayette is like, I feel like I'm, even though I'm getting older, I feel mm-hmm. like this young, energetic person wanting to fight for a purpose
mm-hmm.
in life.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, of course, being very active in the movement. Of course, the New Jersey Libertarian Party becoming a sponsor for us, as well as just the people that are in there, are very big in activism, getting out there to pass the message of freedom on. I mean, that's to meet him, it's kind of saying, like, we're at that next stage of life that we have to take on a movement to keep passing on the message of freedom to people.
Well, I think, you know, as we talked about here today, and I want to bring some closure to what Frank and Maria brought in here, you know, when they were talking about history. And, you know, in 1979, when the Iranians took over the embassy and mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter was president, he said, you know, he's basically trying to figure, well, you know, what did we do, you know, to them to cause this? And we said, well, we deposed the Shah, and he, you know, in 1953, and he goes, well, that's ancient history. You know, we're talking about this stuff being ancient history, but history does matter.
Yeah.
And coming out of 9/11, nobody ever wants to see that happen again.
Mm-hmm.
But we remember back at the presidential debates of 2008, the two polar opposites were Rudy Giuliani and Ron Paul.
Mm.
Neither of them wants to see this happen again. But, you know, Giuliani was like, let's get on our high horse, let's get over there, clean house in the Middle East, and, you know, make this all go away. And Ron Paul,
same guy dressed up in the a woman's outfit,
right? And Ron Paul was saying, like, maybe we ought to take a look at history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is certainly not excusable what happened here,
mm-hmm.
but there are reasons why these things happen.
Yeah,
and you know, we all, I think there's many Americans have different points of view. We don't want to see this happen again,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's time for us to consider, yes, we see horrible things happening in the Middle East. We see people's heads being beheaded. But are we going to be able to change that? And are we going to be able, and by putting ourselves in that conflict, do we actually make ourselves less safe every day that we do that? So I think that, you know, that's something we need to bring out of that conversation.
And also we have to look at, I mean, was it justified going into certain other countries? I mean, yeah, we got Afghanistan, but going in Iraq and certain other places. You know, I wanted to say something here. You know, it was wrong for that to happen, 9/11. It was wrong for those individuals that flew the planes into the towers, flew the planes in the Pentagon, and also in Pennsylvania. And they said it was, what was it, 9 out of 12 terrorists flew that plane. 9 of them was from Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And, you know, I'm going to say something, and the people are listening. You know, American government killed over 1 million people. 1 million people in Afghanistan and Iraq. And 2,000-some people died in the towers, which was wrong.
Right.
But we killed over a million. Let me say 1 million.
I mean, it's wrong on all fronts.
Yeah,
both sides.
It's wrong on all fronts, but understand this. Can our country justify killing 1 million people?
I don't think it could justify one killing.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
one
but that's
kill,
my
but
own. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing we have to look at.
And I think Neil had brought it up a couple months ago, but, you know, what Ron Paul wanted to do was to issue a letter of marque. Say, okay, here's a man's taking credit for this, and this was the constitutional way. Said, this is he. Let's go get this man. Let's not go to a war.
A war,
and
right.
then the war has changed from being a mission to capture Osama bin Laden, to building a nation that doesn't exist.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and there's a huge difference constitutionally between declaring war against a whole nation versus that mark and reprisal. Mark and reprisal is you are defending the country to the person that was the person that did the act. It's as opposed to just putting a blanket statement over a whole a region of a world.
Yeah. It was the same thing happened in after Pearl Harbor, you know, what they did to Japan, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. You know, and one of the documentaries I was watching is that Patton and I think it was MacArthur said that there was no reason. They didn't believe that they should even drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki because Japan was giving up anyway.
Right. I got to address a technical issue happening in the chat room. There are people joining the chat room, which we love, where you can get it through hamiltonradio.net. Click on the chat room. But users that are coming in are getting leaving, which is there is a setting that the people in the background are changing so that the user can stay on longer. So we'll address that, and we apologize that you guys are getting booted and you're going in and out on the chat room. But we're glad you're joining the conversation.
So there's a lot of issues that we could definitely talk about, and you know we would have to, you know, one of the things that we have to get on the show is have a few world historians on, so we can talk about some of these issues that are happening around and how, you know, basically, you know, they're getting to the Ottoman Empire.
Right. And there's an excellent, let me recommend an excellent article about this in this month's American Conservative, the one that has the prison on the front, talks about the fact that there are more prisons in America now than there are colleges. There's an excellent article by Patrick J. Buchanan, the TV commentator and former presidential candidate, about our foreign policy over the last 20 to 30 years, and Republican and Democrat alike, that lays this out in great detail and lets you know where we stand in terms of intervention, and lets you really get an idea of what maybe the road the piece might be.
Yeah. You know, once again, if you want to give us a call, we got about 6 minutes, 609-800-1003. And check us out on our chat room. You know, one of the things that's so great, Joe, is that we've got all this stuff happening online, and you can go to our Twitter, and we have a Twitter, right?
We have a Twitter, too. We're just tightening things up. So in, you know, probably by the end of the week, I've got all these pieces out there. I want to make sure they're all connected. They're all connected to each other, to our On Fire News website, to our Hamilton Radio hosts, to our
New Jersey Libertarian Party link to that as well.
There will be banners, you know, for those guys as well. So,
and I do want to just say, like, that we're guests from Winnipeg that joined
Winnipeg.
Us in conversations. Steve from Virginia.
Hey, Steve.
Dale from Winnipeg. So we had some
Winnipeg, yes. My cousin played for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what are they?
Was that the Canadian football team?
Canadian football team.
I did not know that.
Yeah, ask him, does he know Tyrone Jones, Ty Jones. He played for the
Winnipeg. Dale, if you're listening, jump back into the chat room. And
he's on the Hall of Fame for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
He was one of those nasty football players. He'd take your helmet off. And
oh, you know who I got to meet this weekend on Friday? Clyde Frazier. Frazier.
Clyde the Glide.
Yeah, Clyde the Glide.
Yeah.
We were in New York. We went to the Billy Joel concert.
Oh, wow.
Which was awesome.
Billy Joel, he's still around?
Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, that's his home now.
Yeah.
So
wasn't he married to that beautiful...
Christy Brinkley.
Yeah. Oh. Uptown girl. Uptown girl.
Yeah,
with a downtown guy. Yeah. Uptown and downtown. Everything's about to go down.
So there was a question asked. Hey, there was a question asked earlier on the chat room I want to go back to. So if the Prime Minister of Israel and the leader of the Palestine Authority can walk together, why can't Obama be there?
because I think is one of the issues is that, you know, protection-wise, you know, it's the fact that, you know, when you have the Secret Service and go to these countries, you know, and it's, if I understand, it was an open area.
Right.
You know, and, you know, you just...
So essentially we're saying that the President of the United States is a near god who cannot be approached, meanwhile, Putin... And Bibi Netanyahu and everybody else, every other leader of state are all there.
Was Putin there?
Yes, he was. He joined hands with the guy from the Ukraine. Everybody was there. It was like the world threw a party and Barack was not invited.
Right.
Yeah, I think, but
he was home polishing his Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Peace,
but
right?
I think that the fact that they said that America was helping out and America was a part of the procedures of helping with the defense and the specialty as we do.
Oh, yeah, we always help with the defense. We're always you know, willing to bomb somebody. And you know what I really think we should be thinking about? You know, we have this strategy of going to where there's terrorist cells and droning and bombing. France has a problem. Maybe we should start droning France. Yeah. We should find the places and
not with the French fries, though.
Liberty fries?
Liberty fries. You do keep the fries. Don't bomb the fries.
Do not
bomb the fries.
Or the toast.
The building.
Hey, and I do want to get...
Factory, French fry factory.
I just want you to know that because of last week's show, a listener actually went out and bought a brand new Don't Tread on Me flag and made sure it was nicely displayed in their yard.
Oh, wow.
They were so excited about the John Galt show. Yes, they did. They took a picture and sent it.
What's that?
I will have to forward it to you. Plus,
you know, you can also go buy On Fire News Network cups.
Yes, you can.
Yes.
And the winners from last week did receive. I know
they
one person
received
their prizes, their shirts, and the cells.
Right.
So I don't know if there's any more open, but
I didn't have any more come in. But if there's any more, t-shirts, let me know. We'll keep on. We'll keep on giving them first come, first serve until we run out.
Sure.
Go to onfirenn.com and buy a cup. Onfirenn.com and go buy an On Fire News Network cup. You can buy the cups. You can buy hats. You can buy mugs. You can buy T-shirts. You can buy the buttons.
Let me tell you guys, we got Valentine's Day coming up, and if you really want to see your woman get hot when she sees an On Fire coffee cup, she's going to go nuts.
And it's red, too, and it's that great color
red. The
women
go wild for an On Fire, Fire merchandise.
Yeah. And our comment from the chat room was there's 40 other world leaders there.
Uh-huh.
It makes no sense why Obama shouldn't
have
been
there. Was China
the
leader there? The lead from China?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
No.
But
no?
I don't think he was there Kim Jong Il.
Kim Jong Il? Oh, wow.
Yeah. But again, for
Kim Jong, is it Il or Ung?
Ung, I don't know. I think
Kim Jong Un.
Well, remember, the President of the United States is
he was
really
at the Golden Globes.
The third most important part of the government. I mean, he's not the first most important part of the government.
Uh-huh.
He's Article 2, not Article 1.
Okay.
So we should have sent John Boehner.
Yeah.
Well, remember
Boehner.
People are first, right?
Uh-huh.
States are second.
Yeah.
And then president comes in, third.
Third.
Well, he did
I am
the
third.
Attorney General though. Attorney General was there.
That Eric Holder.
Yeah. But he was not in the parade.
There was a comment on that about that.
He was in a meeting.
Eric Holder was in town.
Yes.
But there was another comment made earlier on the chat room about Eric Holder. Yeah, he was in Paris but could not find the time to attend.
Mm-hmm.
What does that say to the people of France, Europe, and all the other leaders that were there?
Maybe the French
who have a reputation of being quick to surrender
now
look much stronger than the United States. They had, 1.3 million people in that march?
Mm-hmm. A million-man march.
Right. It's a million-man march.
Farrakhan was Farrakhan there.
Maybe with all the important people being in the parade, he was able to get, good reservations in a restaurant.
Yeah.
So he decided to take advantage.
Yeah, yeah. And if you like the show, of course, let your friends know about the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Join the chat room.
It's 10:32.
Facebook friend. Friend us on the On Fire.
All right. I'd like to say thank you to everybody for listening to the show. And thank you to Frank Marrow and Maria Abato.
Abate.
And this is a great.
Beautiful, beautiful woman.
She is.
Beautiful
yes.
woman.
Oh. And listen.
No, she's beautiful.
I got to just say in general.
She's a beautiful guest. Yeah, yeah. And she was the most. She is probably the prettiest guest I've ever seen on the show.
Well, I just want to say this is the best way to. End my 43rd year of life and enter my 44th year of life.
Yeah, it's your birthday.
It's my birthday tomorrow.
You're going to, play that 50 Cent song. It's your birthday. You're going to party like it's your birthday.
Yeah.
You know, it's your birthday.
I thank you guys for having me on the show, of course.
Wow, I am 2 years older than you.
I guess so. I mean, I know I'm grayer than you.
Yeah, you're grayer than me. What's going on?
I don't know. It's
to start the Beijing.
I guess become a CPA and you become great. Quick.
Beijing. That great.
So
CPA. I Beijing
you should,
sometimes.
You should talk to your friend Walt Clyde about the, getting the Just for Men gel.
Yeah.
Your beard is weird.
My health is 10 times better. I've been taking some great products. Hamilton Radio is a sponsor of Mind 90 for Life.
Mm.
It's what's the actual banner for to check out products? Some really good products that I've been taking. HamiltonRadioNet.Mind90forLife.
That's right.
.com.
.com.
So, and thank you, Libertarian Party.
Thank you.
All right.
It's now 10:34.
It's 10:34, and we're out of here. I'd like to thank all our listeners and HamiltonRadio.net. And, you know, it's been a great. It's definitely been great. And we hope you have a great birthday. And
thank you.
Yes, we have definitely hope you have a great birthday. We should have did something, a cake or something.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
I'd have got my mother to make.
We should have had like a naked woman jump out of a cake.
Yeah,
or something.
I'd have my mom make you a sweet potato pie or something.
Well, the chat room just filled up the end of our show.
When they heard about naked women jumping out of cakes,
going off the air. But please join us next week. I will actually. I won't be here next week, and I won't be here the week after.
Where are you going?
I am going down to Florida, so I'll try to call in.
All right.
And then I'm on a Disney cruise.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
With the family.
Okay. Say hi to Mickey.
I will. Anyway.
Hey, we're out of here. See you next week.
Yeah. Buona sera.
On Tuesday, January 27th, the On Fire Show's guest will be Jordan Page. Jordan is a Ron Paul supporter and musician. Don't miss this exciting show right here on HamiltonRadio.net, channel HR2.